So now we'll stay in the marine area, but above water as opposed to below. No, well, we will use, from what I've understood, and I'm really fascinated to hear about this work, we'll be talking about, indeed, seabirds as a way of monitoring the global changes in marine ecosystems. So thank you very much, Henri, for coming to give us this presentation, and I look forward to it.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me to give this talk today. So we will continue in the marine environment, but on larger organisms that rely on the smaller organism. And I will be talking you on a group we are working in my lab in Chizé, seabirds. And so seabirds are well known for gathering in very large colony, like here off the coast of Peru. It's a large colony of several species of guano birds that congregate here. But seabirds, they rely entirely on what's happened at sea, in fact. And for this reason, so they spend most of their time, 90 to 95% of their time, they spend it at sea, foraging for food, foraging for small organisms, for fish, for squid, crustaceans. And for this reason, because they are accessible on land, but they are relying on what's happened at sea, they have been considered as quite a good indicator of the marine, what's happened in the marine environment. And the idea is that if you want to know what's happened in the environment, especially there are very few information on what's happened from one year to the next at a lower level in the marine ecosystem, in the trophic webs, the idea is to use the seabirds that rely on some species, rely on crustaceans, other on small fish, on myctophyte fish, on larger cephalopods, for example, and looking at their abundance, the change in abundance, and looking at their distribution will give you some idea of what's happened in the marine environment. And also, because fisheries have having a very big impact and they are either exploiting or even for many species over-exploiting resources in the environment, but also they have negative impact on many marine predators like seabirds, sea turtles, sharks, many species. It's quite interesting also to use, and I will give you an example of using the seabirds as indicator of the fisheries in the, especially of fisheries for whom we have very few information. So my talk will be divided in two parts. First, I will be talking you about penguins and using them as indicator of climate change in the marine environment. And in the second part, I will be talking you about albatrosses, climate change, but also the relationship with fisheries, and especially whether we can use them as sentinels, as indicator of fisheries activities. So first, in our lab in Chizé, we have long-term monitoring of many seabird species in the Southern Ocean from the Crozet, Kerguelen, Amsterdam, and Terra Adélie base, where we have a monitoring of species since more than 60 years. So we have, for many species, the change in the population size, but also survival rates, breeding success, recruitment in the population. But also, we are using a lot of small loggers that we can put on this bird to have indication of where the birds are foraging and also what they are doing when they are foraging. So all the activity can be monitored with very small loggers that we can put, and I will be giving you some example of what we can do with these small loggers. So first, let's talk about penguins, and I will be talking to you about one species of penguin, king penguins, that are breeding on subantarctic islands. They are breeding on the Crozet and Kerguelen Island especially. They are gathering in very large colonies, like you can see here, a large colony on the Crozet Island, and they are feeding. They are very specialized. They are feeding on myctophyte fish, very small fish that are very abundant, super abundant. Probably the largest resources in the Southern Ocean are myctophyte fish. And there are very few things known about this myctophyte fish in the environment. And so we have tracked these penguins that are breeding on the Crozet Island by using this kind of logger. So it's an Argos transmitter. It gives you the location of the bird. And you can see that these birds, they are traveling, they go at sea, they leave the colony, they're traveling up to a very specific area, which is called the polar front. So it's a meeting of the warm, of the cold Antarctic waters with some Antarctic water. So it's a very productive area, and so they are going there, and they stay there for foraging. So we have used specific loggers, so in addition to the Argos logger or GPS, we are using loggers that can record when the birds are swallowing prey. So it's a whole sensor that is put on the beak. At each time the bird is opening the beak, it's monitored and recorded, and we can count exactly the number of fish that the bird is catching. So for example, for this trip of this bird, he caught 2,500 prey, so mictophyte fish. Here you have the profile for the day of the trip, so it lasted about a 10-day trip, and the depth at which the mictophyte fish are caught. So you see that the birds are diving up to 250 meters to catch the prey, and each small dot here, you have numbers, it indicates you when the bird exactly caught, when it was diving, when it was catching this mictophyte fish. So first, the bird is moving to the south, to the south polar front area, and you see that it's catching at 250 meters some mictophyte fish, but not a lot. And as soon as it's reaching the polar front, you see that it's diving not as deep, so at 150 meters, so at shallower water, so it's much lower effort for him to catch the prey, and he catch all the prey, most of the prey are caught in this area. And after the bird returned to this colony, and again a few prey are caught, and after it returned on the colony to feed the chick. We have recorded this track of the bird over more than 20 years now, and you can see that in fact all the tracks here, the position of the polar front area, you can see that the polar front is moving from one year to the next. Some years it's very close from Crozet, some other years it's much further away. For example, here, if we just look at a small part of this track, you can see that in 1994 it was traveling only at 300 kilometers south from Crozet, and in 1997, 98, it was traveling at 600 meters, so much further away. And if you look at the dive effort, so the number of kilometers, in fact, the bird is diving, if you put all the dives one after the other, you see that it's diving much more in 1997. So in fact, 1997-98, it's an El Niño year, a very warm period. You see the sea level elevation is high, so this means the water are much warmer than the previous year. So when the water are warm, the birds have to go much further because the polar front has shifted to the south, and also they are diving much more because the mictophyte fish are at deeper waters to be caught. So big change from one year to the next, whether the water are cold or warm. If you look at the change in the population size here, you see that population had increased in the 80s, and at the time, the water at this very warm event in 1997-98, the population has declined very steeply, and the survival of the birds was very low during this warm periods. If you look at another colony, a very huge, it was the largest penguin colony in the world on the Île aux Cochons, another island, which is a bit further away from the polar front. In 1982, this colony was 500,000 pairs. So it was 2 million birds in the colony. But when we flew over the colony in 2016, it's very rarely visited, this colony. Here was the previous colony border, and we see that now there are very few birds, only a few small part of the colony are resting in the area. And we use satellite images from over the past 20 years, and we saw that in fact the population has passed from 500,000 birds in 1980 to today it's 65,000 birds only. So we have lost about more than 1 million birds in the colony. So it was a huge effect on the colony that we monitored, but also on remote and very large colonies. If you look now at what will happen in the future, so using the modeling of the IPCC, how the water will change in the area in the next 100 years, it's clear that in fact the polar front will be shifting to the south. This is clearly shown here, the distance from the Crozet Islands to the polar front. You see that today is 400 kilometers and it will be 600 to 800 kilometers in 100 years. So this means that in fact, even in 50 years, we will be in the condition that we had during the very warm year, the El Niño years in 1997. So this means that in fact the population will not be able to rely no more on the polar front. And this is clear here. Here is the polar front with a different colony where king penguins are breeding today, with the shift of the population from 2050, probably the population on Crozet, Kerguelen, and Marion Islands, they will be not able to be sustainable, and so they will disappear. The only population that will be able to remain will be on Heard Island. So this is an example of how the climate change probably will affect this this population through an effect on a very specific oceanographic feature of the polar front. Another example I will talk to you is about wandering albatrosses. So wandering albatrosses are very large birds. They breed on small islands around the Antarctica. They are large birds, so 8 to 10 kilograms, 3.5 wingspan, so huge birds. And we have monitored this population over the past 60 years. So here we have the change in the population size of the Crozet Island population. You see that population have declined in the 70s and 80s. It has increased and now it's stabilizing and slightly decreasing. So what could have caused this change in the population? So of course we are thinking at climate change, and one particular specificity of this bird is a bird that is relying extensively on wind. So it's using the wind as it climbs against the wind behind the waves, and after it increases, and the wing strength will increase with the altitude, and after it will do a long soaring flight among the waves. And by using this kind of wind, we have shown, for example, that with this we have tracked this bird from Crozet, and just to give you a scale of the movement of this bird, when they are breeding, not when they are migrating, just when they are breeding to bring food to the chick, for example, this trip corresponds to a bird breeding that would breed in Brittany here in France, and would go off New York to feed and return on its colony in Brittany. So it's very huge, long movement of this bird, and this is made possible because they are using the wind for the strength. So they are using the wind to take altitude and after to do this long soaring flight. So, and we have shown that by using loggers that record heart rate, for example, that when the birds are flying, are in flight, the heart rate is almost the same as when the bird is resting on the nest. So they are using no energy because they are able to use the wind. And they are using the wind by using side winds, and also the stronger the wind, the quicker the movement is. And so over the past 20 years, there has been a very important change in the wind strength in the Southern Ocean. So because of the ozone depletion and change in CO2 in the atmosphere, there has been an increase in the meridional pressure gradient. So this means that in fact the wind has increased, and also the areas where the strong depression are passing in the Southern Ocean are shifting to the south. So this is evident for when recorded to Crozet. So this is the wing strength on Earth. You see that the Crozet area is the area with the strongest wind on Earth. And you see that the average wing strength has increased over the past 20 years in the Crozet area. And also, if you look at different latitudes, it has increased, especially at the latitude of Crozet and close to Antarctica, and not further north in subtropical waters. So what are the consequences for the birds? The birds are able to travel much faster because of the wind. The wind is stronger. They have traveled much faster, and also their range has shifted to the south. So this means they are not foraging no more in subtropical water. They are shifting to subantarctic and Antarctic water. So very important changes in the distribution and in the travel speed of the bird. And the consequences are very important. For example, the duration of the trip, the time it takes them to find food at sea, has decreased by 20%. The breeding success has increased, and the mass of the birds has increased by 1 kilogram, which is huge, in fact. They have taken 1 kilogram more over the past 20 years. So this means that overall, for wandering albatrosses, climate change has been positive. In fact, breeding success has increased, they are traveling faster, they are in better condition, but still this doesn't explain why the population has decreased. So in fact, we have looked at other factors that might affect this population. So the decrease in the population was due to, in fact, to a low adult survival, especially the survival of females, and the present decrease here is due to a lack of recruitment. I will not go into details, but we have shown in a previous study that, in fact, the low survival, so the high mortality of the bird in the 70s and 80s, was due to a mortality in longline fisheries, especially in longline fisheries for tuna. So what's the problem? Albatrosses are attracted by boats. They are attracted especially by the bait. And when the line is put in the sea, for example, for longliner for tuna, the line are up to 120 kilometers long. So very, very long line to catch tuna, sharks, and many other species. The albatrosses are attracted. They take the bait, that are small fish or small squids, and they are hooked, and they sink with the line. And so it's estimated that every year about 100,000 albatrosses and petrel are killed every year because of this kind of fishery in the Southern Ocean. So that's why we were interested to gain information on this fishery, especially because in the Southern Ocean, especially around islands, there are legal fisheries and also illegal fisheries. So very few information on this illegal fisheries especially, and very few information also in international waters on the tuna fisheries. We don't know exactly on very broad scale. We know that there is an effort for tuna, but we don't know where the different boats are operating and which countries are operating exactly. And around the island, around Crozet, Kerguelen especially, there is a legal fishery that is catching Patagonian toothfish. And also there are illegal boats that are operating. We don't know where exactly. So because of this, and because of this low recruitment in the young, we have been founded by the ERC to study, in fact, these young birds that are leaving. And so the idea, we have tried to find a way, in fact, to know when a bird was behind a boat. Because, in fact, we have not the location of the boat except for the legal fisheries operating in the economic zone. So, in fact, we had the idea that any boat that is fishing anywhere is using a radar. So we develop a specific logger, so with a GPS, but also with a radar detector. We can receive the emission of the radar and report it on the logger, and after it's, we can download the logger and have the information where the bird was and when it had encountered a boat, a fishing boat mainly. And these are the results. For example, all the blue tracks are the track of the bird from the colony on Crozet. You see that they are traveling everywhere around the Crozet Island, and each yellow dot is a radar detection, so a boat that has been detected by the boat. So you see that the birds are extensively foraging on the shelf around the Crozet Island, and they are encountering quite a lot of boats. And this, for example, is birds that are traveling behind boats, that are following boats that are returning to Reunion Island. But also, what was interesting, that in fact, we had these birds are most of the reported boats that are fishing legally in the area. So it's a fishery coming from Reunion Island for Patagonian toothfish. But also, we recorded illegal fishing boats in the EEZ. So using these birds, these boats were not known to be fishing there. So with this in mind, in fact, we had another funding from the ERC, so it's a proof of concept. So the concept was, in fact, to use the seabirds by using loggers that record radar, but also that can send immediately by the Argo system, that can send the information immediately to have an immediate information on the location of boats that are encountered by albatrosses. So we had this large program in this year, so during the winter, the idea that in fact at each time a bird encounter a boat, any boat, the information is immediately transmitted through the Argo system. We receive it at the lab in Chizay. We compare the information with the AES. So AES, it's automatic information system. Any boat should have this system so that you can know where boats are. So it's it was used first for anti-collision between boats, but any boat in the world can be located. So you can see this here. It's a map, for example, at an instant T. You can see all the boats in the Southern Indian Ocean that are located here. So red are a fishing boat, green are a transport boat. So we can compare the location of the boat detected by the albatrosses and the AES. And so this was done in collaboration with the CROSS, which is the authority that are regulating all the boats in the Southern Indian Ocean. It's army-related control. And in fact, the idea that in case there is an illegal boat, even if there is a Navy boat around, it can control where the boats are. So this is all the tracks that we had. The birds were fitted from Crozet, Kerguelen, and Amsterdam Island. So we see that we have a very good, very large coverage of the area, 40,000 million square kilometers. We had 600,000 location of the bird, and we were able to locate 350 boat vessels, mainly fishing vessels. This is an example, for example, in the EEZ, so economic zone around Kerguelen. We see that all the yellow dots are the boats that are detected, and we have some boats, for example here, a boat that is not known as a fishing boat by the legal fishery. Here is another boat that is it's a Spanish boat that is known to enter in the EEZ. So here the boat is known to be this boat, and after it enter here, and it stopped the AES, and so it's no more identified because it's fishing illegally, and after it's returned. So we can see this with the bird. And so in total, so this is what we had for this program. So this is the zone in blue, the zone that we were monitoring with the bird. And we have the declared AES, so the bird with the AES system, so declared bird, and all the illegal or not declared boats, because when they are in the EEZ, they are considered illegal. When they are in international waters, they have no AES, but they are not illegal. So you can see that there is quite a large proportion of non-declared boats in international waters. So more than one-third of the boat had no AES in the international waters. In the French EEZ, there are a low number of illegal boats this time, so they are not fishing with a license. So it depends on which EEZ. And for example, in the South African EEZ around Prince Edward Island, no boat had an AES. So there was no legal boat fishing, but there were only illegal boat fishing in this area. So this is just to show you that it's possible to use these seabirds as indicators and even as informators about fisheries that were not available so far, on especially what is the amount of illegal or non-declared fishing boat in the ocean. So with this, thank you for your attention.
Thank you, that was really interesting. So maybe I can ask one quick question, which is, I mean, now that you know you can track them, is there any way that you could use, the boats could be hooked up with some system to deter these birds from actually, going to their deaths? In other words, some kind of detractive...
So it's very... it has been developed over the last 20 years. In fact, there are several systems that allow birds not to be caught. And so the first system is to set the line at night, for example, because albatrosses are diurnal birds. You can put more weight in the line so it can sink. There is also what is called torrey lines, which are lines that do not allow the bird to go on the line. So this, in fact, for example, in the EEZ, around Crozet, Kerguelen, is compulsory for all the fishing boats, but only for the legal boat. In international waters, this system are not used. So that's why the mortality is mainly by illegal boat and by legal boats in international waters. Yeah.